Of course it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work, though you are inactive, that you take birth, though you are the vital force and the unborn. You yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. Purport. The transcendental pastimes of the Lord are not only bewildering, but also appear contradictory. In other words, they're all inconceivable to the limited thinking power of the human being. The Lord is the all-prevailing supersoul of all existence, and yet he appears in the form of a boar amongst the animals, in the form of a human being as Ram, Krishna, etc., in the form of a rishi like Narayan, and in the form of an aquatic like a fish. Yet it is said that he is unborn, and he has nothing to do. In the Shruti Mantra, it is said that the Supreme Brahman has nothing to do. No one is equal to or greater than him. He has manifold energies, and everything is performed by him perfectly, by automatic knowledge, strength, and activity. All these statements prove without any question that the Lord's activities, forms, and deeds are all inconceivable to our limited thinking power. And because he's inconceivably powerful, everything is possible in him. Therefore, no one can calculate him exactly. Every action of the Lord is bewildering to the common man. He cannot be understood by the Vedic knowledge, but he can be easily understood by the pure devotees because they're intimately related with him. The devotees therefore know that although he appears among the animals, he's not an animal, nor a man, nor a rishi, nor a fish. He's eternally the Supreme Lord in all circumstances. Om Agyanati Manandasya Gyanandana Salakya Shakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandiham Si Guru Si Yuta Pada Kamalam Si Gurun Vaisnavamscha Si Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Se Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Dalita Sivisakan Pitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sinna Dinabandha Jagatpate Gopi Sagopi Kakanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visabana Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare When Nimai was still a small baby, miracles would happen in the house. Namely, his parents, they would see the footprints of the Lord in the house, and sometimes they heard the sound of a running child with ankle bells on in the house. So, after duly considering the whole situation, Jagannath Mishra concluded that it had to be the Shaligram Shila that was running through the house, logically. Because after all, the Shaligram Shila can do anything. But obviously Nimai was just an ordinary child. So that was not an option, that it was Nimai. And he couldn't even walk, so there was no question that it could be Nimai. So in this way, Jagannath Mishra was calculating. He was calculating what Nimai could do. based on the fact that he was now in a child body, and children can only do so much. But no, such calculations do not apply. Putana for a moment saw it. When she looked at the little child, for a moment she thought, this child is so powerful, this child can destroy the entire universe. And said, nah, rubbish. Yeah. Then the mind came in and started editing, and said, nah, this is rubbish. It's just a child. Right. Okay, here's the poison, and ready to go. Didn't quite work out. Indeed, that child was able to destroy the entire universe and easily destroy Putana. So in this way, Krishna is Asamurdhva. He is unequaled, unrivaled. He is unlimitedly powerful. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam. He is one without a second. He is inconceivable. He is unlimited, and also has his form is unlimited, and he has unlimited forms. Ananta Rupa means both that his form is unlimited, and he also has unlimited forms. So in this way, we appreciate Krishna. But then, in these prayers, Kunti is making this point, then how amazing it is that at the same time he is appearing in a human form or in an animal form. Or she continues that Yasoda took up a rope to bind you. All these kind of symptoms where he is limited, and where he is acting within a human scope. That is very interesting. How Krishna is in his behavior a lot of the time limiting himself to the confines of human existence. That makes him very accessible. When Arjuna saw the universal form, then Arjuna became bewildered. And Arjuna started to say, oh my Lord, please forgive me for lying with you on the same bed, for treating you in such a disrespectful way. But Arjuna could not for long face that all-pervading, all-powerful form of the Lord. It was just too overwhelming. The destroying element within that form, it was just too much. And Arjuna asked the Lord to return to his original form. Then the Lord took a four-armed form, and then he took his two-armed form. To show, really, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it is very interesting that Krishna, in his original form, has a human form, and that at the same time, this human form is unlimited in potency. That is very interesting. And that in his interactions, he shows both features, the human side and the superhuman side. And he alternates the two, and that makes it very, very interesting. Prabhupada is describing how it's difficult to have a relationship with the universal form. He said you cannot really dress the universal form. It's like the universal form is just too great to really relate to. I mean, we could take an example of an ant, and let's say we have try to keep an ant as a pet. It's very difficult because the ant is very small. How can you keep an ant as a pet? First of all, in our dealings with the ant, sorry, just broke off a leg. What to do? Anyway, it's got many, kind of. How can you deal with it? Too small. And the ant. Can an ant even see us? Like, in one view. In the course of the years, I was for a while in charge of the construction of Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi Mandir in Mayapur. And at the time, one of the things I learned was that the grounds that are around a building should be exactly to a point that when you go through the entrance gate, that you can see the whole building in one glance, right, from top to bottom. Then you have the proper dimension for the grounds. Of course, we don't have that, but that would be ideal. So, imagine, could an ant see us in one glance? Maybe not. Maybe to an ant we look like a flying mountain. This big foot comes, which is like as big as a hill. And the ant just sees this hill in the sky and another one there. So from an ant's perspective, human beings may be something like flying mountains. Anyway, with this example, I'm trying to illustrate how it is difficult to relate between very large and very small. So how can we relate to the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It is not possible. How can one develop a real relationship? It is very difficult. But when the Supreme Lord appears in a human form, then, yes, he's close to us. And he shows all the human features, human-like feelings also. So in this way, Krishna is predictable, and it's possible to have a relationship. And yet, then, just when we thought that he was completely predictable, then he does anything and everything. And then the divinity of Krishna suddenly manifests, and it's just, everyone is just in a state of complete shock. Whether he has just swallowed a forest fire, or whether he's lifted a hill, or whatever supernatural feat he has just performed, killed some large demon, whatever it is, in all these features, Krishna shows his superhuman nature. And then, of course, the devotee is reminded of Krishna's superhuman nature, and that actually he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Mother Yasoda looked in Krishna's mouth and to see if there was clay, and when she saw the entire universe in his mouth, then it is said that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes in his commentary what happens to Mother Yasoda. The first thing she thinks, I'm hallucinating. You know, I mean, whatever I'm seeing, it's not real. I mean, that's not real. I'm definitely hallucinating. Maybe I've lost it. Maybe I've gone mad. That's the first thing she thinks. Then she thinks, no, but why would I have just gone mad right now? I have no history with madness, no experience with madness, and why would I suddenly go mad just right now at this very moment? Nah, that's not so likely. Then maybe it is Deva Maya. Maybe the demigods are creating this illusion, this hallucination. Of course, the demigods can do such a thing, but why would they do it? To just an ordinary woman like me. No, that also doesn't make sense. And then she finally thinks, then maybe what I'm seeing is actually real, and then maybe he is not my son, and maybe I am not the queen of Vrindavan, and maybe He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's just standing there for a moment, thinking like that. And then Krishna was crawling on the ground like a child, and suddenly motherly affection took over, and she just picked him up and put him on her lap and forgot everything. So we see these moments of dawning in Yasoda, of like how Krishna's divine nature becomes known, and then she forgets again under the influence of Yoga Maya. And then we see that Krishna is engaging in human-like pastimes and plays with cowherd boys in the spiritual world. Of course, one might think it may not be so much fun to play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because you sneak up from behind, cover his eyes, and say, "Who am I?" And he says, "I am the all-knowing, all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead. I already knew of your intentions before you even had them. I know, you know, not only who you are, but your entire lineage, you know, I can trace them back. I know who you were in all your previous birth," and so on. It's like, "I never play with you again, you know." I mean, forget it, right? It's no fun. All right, but Yoga Maya is there. And Krishna allows, although he's all-powerful, he allows his energy to simply control him, so that he can also forget, so that he really doesn't know. And when his eyes are covered, he is to guess. Sridhar? Not Sridhar. Then? Sudama? Then? Who could it be? Like this. Krishna allows himself to be limited. Limited by Yoga Maya? No, Krishna cannot be limited by Yoga Maya. Krishna voluntarily places himself. Krishna voluntarily places himself under the limiting influence of Yoga Maya. But he's, in a true sense, not limited by Yoga Maya. Rather, Krishna is limited by love. That's basically it. Why does Krishna take birth? To fulfill the desire of his parents. And it's like, if we look in this series of verses, it's very interesting. I like these verses, and I like to read them on Janmashtamis. It says, like, it continues from here. Let's go for a moment. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say he's born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in this family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. Others say that since both Vasu and Devaki prayed for you, you've taken your birth as your son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare, to kill those who are envious of the demigods. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you've appeared to diminish the trouble. And yet others say that you have appeared to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. Okay, so a whole list is given of reasons why Krishna appeared. Possibly appeared here. But all these reasons are true. Krishna appeared because of all these reasons. So he appeared in reciprocation with his devotees. That is why he took birth. Otherwise, he has no business taking birth. There's no need taking birth. And of course, his birth is not birth, because he appears in a full form, forearms, helmet, fully dressed, and so on, and then takes the form of a child. So that is different. Also, the pregnancy, it is explained that the Lord was conceived through Diksha. And it says that from the state of consciousness of Vasudev, his consciousness was Vasudev. It was pure conscious, pure goodness, Visuddhisattva, pure transcendental goodness. And that from the state of consciousness of pure transcendental goodness of Vasudev, then that consciousness was transferred to Devaki, who then also had that state of pure goodness, and then pregnancy evolved. So in this way, then the Lord manifested in the womb. So definitely not an ordinary conception, an immaculate conception, a completely transcendental appearance. Therefore, where is a question of Janma? Therefore, celebrating Janmashtami is actually, in a sense, you know, to celebrate the birthday of Krishna, the Janma, doesn't make sense. At least not in the ordinary sense. It's Krishna's birthday. No, it's not. Right? No, it's not. He never takes birth. Yeah. No way. He's Aja. Okay. Aja, the one who does not take birth. But of course, all right, then we translate as appearance. Appearance. Okay. So, his transcendental appearance. Like the sun appears. It's not that the sun just comes into being in the morning, right? And at night, there was no sun. And then in the mornings, something bubbles, and out of nowhere, this big fiery ball appears. No. The sun is going around the globe and just pops up over the horizon, and it's morning again. So Prabhupada explains that in the same way Krishna does not appear, Krishna does not disappear, and his pastimes are rather going on eternally. And Prabhupada also explains that, yes, somewhere it is Janmashtami right now, right? Krishna appears in unlimited universes again and again, and all his pastimes are going on, and just somewhere it's Janmashtami. In another universe, he's just killing Agasura, and, you know, like, in another one, Govardhan Puja is just going on, and Krishna is about to lift the hill. All these things are happening here in London. It's, I don't know if there is a special occasion on the Vaishnava calendar today. I mean, I didn't look this morning. What? I'm going to pull it out, the monster. No problem. There's always a reason to use the thing. Well, Shivratri says, yeah. So, somehow or other, we are in this way seeing different events taking place in different locations. But one who is thinking a little broader than just the location sees it all going on everywhere. Sages have this udaradi, this broader vision. They see beyond the time, place, and circumstances. I experienced once, I went to see Madan Mohan, the original deities in Karoli, and I came, and the pujari was so nice and gave me full Mahaprasadam, and everything was very sweet. And I made a comment to this pujari, and I said that, oh, you're so fortunate, because to serve in such a place where the influence of Kali Yuga is not so present. Right? And then I sort of say, you know, there are places where Kali Yuga is really present, sort of with a from, we know what it's like, you know, and anyone in London could sort of go, yeah, we know, you know, yeah, we could write it, the Kali Yuga Samhita, no problem. That would be easy. But the pujari said, ah, yes, the age of Kali, yes, yes, yes. There are 1,000 ages of Kali in one day of Brahma. So he just said the bigger picture. He just wrote off Kali Yuga, a whole yuga. I mean, it's like, yeah, there are 1,000 such yugas in a day of Brahma. It's not so important, you know. Sometimes we get into this Kali Yuga kata, you know, Kali Yuga this, Kali Yuga that, Kali Yuga Yuga, you know, no, really, Kali, ooh, it's bad. Kali Yuga, oh, Kali Yuga. It's, you know, have you heard? It's no, that's typical Kali Yuga. One can do a whole Kali Yuga drama. Yes. But, no. Nah. There's 1,000 of them in a day of Brahma. It's just like a cloud, a speck in the sky. It's gone already. It's sattva again. Satya yuga, wow. Yeah, that's also like a little speck. So these are just all temporary circumstances. So one must deeply, deeply realize the eternal nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must very thoroughly learn to see the bigger picture. We are here in the temporary domain and so affected by it. And only when we look at the eternal domain and the eternal reality can we become thoroughly aloof from what is going on here. Therefore, to thoroughly contemplate this eternal nature of the Lord is important. And in the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, this majesty of the Lord, this eternity, this aspect of the Lord as the source of unlimited forms, unlimited energies, and so on, everything is emanating from the Lord. This understanding is highlighted again and again, so that we thoroughly assimilated it, can assimilate it before we go to understanding. Here is Krishna, who has now limited himself for the sake of love, so that love can be expressed in proper exchange. That's all. And now we can go to Vrindavan, and we can look at Krishna there, the cowherd boy, no longer the Lord, no longer Vaikunthapati, no longer the Lord of who is Yogeshwar, unlimited mystic power. Now simply a cowherd boy who may get defeated. After Kamsa was defeated, after Kamsa was smashed in the wrestling arena in Mathura, then there was, Krishna started playing with his cowherd boy friends, and they started wrestling, and they defeated Krishna. Just to add, like, you know, like, a little bit of, like, what they say, insult to injury. Then, you know, Kamsa's wrestler associates, they became very agitated when they saw that. That was too much. So, in this way, we can appreciate how I mixed it up. Sorry. Memory. No, it's, I tell you now how it really is to correct my mistake. How it really is that after they defeated the wrestlers, Mustika and Chanura, and they were defeated, then they wrestled with these cowherd boys, then they were defeated by the cowherd boys, then Kamsa got very angry, then Kamsa gave order to confiscate all the property of Nanda Maharaj, and then it got too much. Then Krishna was forced to take action. Although he was hesitant to kill his relative, what could he do? To protect Nanda Maharaj, he had to do it. Then he did it. Otherwise, he would not have killed Kamsa. But to protect his relative, yes. To protect Nanda Maharaj, definitely. So in this way, Krishna also shows in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Another theme comes up, because in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita we see a division about Krishna out of Vrindavan and Krishna in Vrindavan. And we see that when Krishna is out of Vrindavan, then Lord Brahma appears to remind Krishna of his duty. As paritranaya sadhanam vinasya sadiskritam dharmasam sarpanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Now you have to annihilate the demons and establish the principles of religion. That's your duty. That's the duty of an avatar. And Lord Brahma comes to remind him. And Krishna really, he wants to go to Vrindavan. He just doesn't want to do it. You know, he doesn't want to work. He wants to simply engage in his pleasure pastimes. Therefore, we can understand that the form of Krishna is the highest form, is the original form, is the form where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually absorbed in his own pleasure pastimes, and that all the more majestic forms are inferior forms, inferior manifestations of the Lord, that he just manifests to deal with situations that are more distant from him. Right? And in this way, we can understand. Whereas others might think, the all-pervading, that is the Narayan, he is the Lord, and Krishna, he is an avatar of the Lord, a secondary thing. And he performs beautiful pastimes, but in that form of majesty, that's the focus. But Gaudiyas understand, no, the focus is not power. The focus is love. And that is actually where the Supreme Lord manifests his greatness in love. Ending with that, any questions, any comments?